The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
We will not let atrocities slide.
A rush to close airspace to Russian aircraft. More countries delivering military aid. Sweden to send Ukraine rations and 5,000 anti-tank weapons. Condemnation from NATO after Putin declared his nuclear forces are on high alert.
This is a behavior which is irresponsible.
The White House called it a manufactured threat.
It's an attempt, an escalatory attempt to justify further action on their part. We have the ability, of course, to defend ourselves.
The U.S. is sending another $54 million in humanitarian aid, emergency food, clean water, and thermal blankets.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon and welcome. It is good to be back with you today. Thank you for joining me. I hope you will be able to hang out at least for the next couple hours as I take you on just an incredible journey. We are going to take a look at all the latest unfolding in Ukraine. I know you might be inundated with a lot of the news, but I want to give you a little bit of a spiritual perspective on that coming up a little later. I want to talk about what happened in 1917 when the rise of Russia was actually prophesied. And we'll talk about what our spiritual response to this should be. As you know, there's a lot of concern about Vladimir Putin's mental state, Condoleezza Rice, Senator Rubio, and others questioning his stability. We'll take a look at that, and we'll also take a look at some prophecies and apparitions, actually, is a better way of putting it. There's been some apparitions that took place in the country of Ukraine even before Fatima. Even before the visions of Our Lady of Fatima. We'll bring you back to, and I'll even share with you some of what she predicted. Seems to be coming true in pretty vivid detail. Also, a little bit later, we'll break down for you the latest on Ketanji Brown Jackson and the way she ruled, whether or not she's a good pick or whether or not we really need to pray for her conversion. And then this threat of nuclear war. One final thing, just put on your radar. If you stay with me, we're going to take a look at some scenarios. What if Vladimir Putin is serious? What if he is not balanced right now? What if he's not bluffing? We see low-yield nuclear weaponry go off, or we see something even greater. Should the U.S. respond in kind? What is just war theory, and is that the moral thing to do? So we got a lot to talk about. You are always welcome. So I really do invite you to join me anytime. You can call in at 888-914-9149. Oh, perhaps one of the most important things we'll do today. Don't want to forget that. We will pray. We're going to pray the chaplet in about an hour. That is a prayer that will hold back the hand of God's justice. It will bring mercy and protection. And I really invite you to pray today with me. Okay, so we'll do that. Please tell others, and they could join us in about an hour here. So let me start with this. Let me just throw a little bit of audio out, and then I'll give you a breakdown of what's happening. There's speculation. This came, I think, from CNN earlier today that Putin's nuclear level threats, in some respects, really reveal his weakness. Here's a different look at what he is saying. Listen.
Putin putting his deterrence forces, as they call them, his nuclear arsenal on high alert. I mean, Ukraine doesn't have a nuclear force. This is just saber rattling. What's going on?
I view what Putin said here as a sign of weakness, not a sign of strength. If things were going well, there would be no need for him to even raise that kind of threat to the world and to the Ukraine. He's obviously trying to send a signal to the United States and to our NATO allies. But I think it's very important that Putin should understand how strong we are when it comes to nuclear deterrence. We've got a three-pronged nuclear deterrent that can respond to any threat. And I think it's important that he understands that if he tries to do anything that might involve nuclear weapons, that he is ending not only the Putin reign, but his regime as well.
Yeah, I've heard other experts say it's an extinction event for him. He has called up his nuclear defense forces, which means that he could be looking at using what the world considers the ultimate weapon against Ukraine. And again, the world, these actions are really isolating him from the world. He looks like a madman, rolling into a sovereign country, taking it over, and threatening to use the deadliest weapons in human history. The Heritage Foundation, they were reporting that Russia has 10 times the number of battlefield nuclear weapons than we do. 10 times that. And again, I'll get into this in greater detail a little bit later in the show today. But yesterday, Vladimir Putin, he gave a statement on the state-run media, and I'll share this quote with you. He says, Western countries are not only taking unfriendly actions against our country in the economic area. I'm speaking about the illegitimate sanctions that everyone is well aware of. However, the top officials of the leading NATO countries are also making aggressive statements against our country as well. So he put what are called the deterrence forces on high alert, which means that, you know, the nuclear weapons are getting ready for possible use. For any leader of a nation even to do that, it's not rational. It's not sane. It's not normal. You're going to hear more about that a little bit later in the show. I do want to dive into that in greater detail. He's already setting up the excuses for possibly using it. But Russia's war on Ukraine, according to multiple sources, is not going well for Vladimir Putin, and maybe that's why he's flexing these muscles. Kyiv is still in Ukrainian hands. Russian forces still have not really made any significant victories, if you will. The European Union is sensing that it has a much bigger problem on its hand than they had anticipated, and now they're taking what you're witnessing history. The NATO is taking unprecedented steps in both financing and delivering $500 million worth of military equipment to a non-EU, a non-NATO country. I mean, think about that for just a moment. This is a non-NATO country, $500 million going to even Germany, which sent, you know, helmets. They had previously ruled out sending any military aid at all. They're now going to be sending, they're sending, you know, support militarily, but they're also committing 100 billion euros of their own military spending, something they probably should have been doing a little bit earlier. But this is a very significant change in terms of the political landscape of what we are seeing here. And we'll have experts joining us in just a moment. We can talk about it in greater detail with them. But, you know, Vladimir Putin did not want NATO on his doorstep, right? What he has done is actually done just that. He has solidified them. He's given them mission. He has given them purpose. And he has really cemented really NATO in a greater way. He's blundered. I mean, this is a tremendous blunder. How does he get out? What's the off-ramp for him? Is there an off-ramp, or will this escalate? You know, will this continue to escalate? Again, let's pray, because before, you know, we can talk politics and war and strategy and it's mental stability, but above all, I just want to call you to prayer. You don't necessarily hear that on other stations. You can watch a lot of news. You're not going to hear the call to prayer. That is what will mitigate that. This is what will make a change. You might think, what can I do? I'm not a world leader. You know, I'm not a strategist. You can pray. And I'll tell you that every day because I believe it. I pray every day. And I pray for this intention. Let's pray for the conversion of Vladimir Putin. Let's pray for some sort of peaceful end to this. We're approaching Lent. We should be praying and fasting. Praying and fasting. You know, doing penance, offering sacrificed. That's what we need to do. You know, Vladimir Putin threatened the nuclear, you know, the use of nuclear weaponry, you know, nations experiencing something never seen in their history. This threat comes as ministers from Russia and Ukraine, they met in Belarus. They're trying to resolve this conflict, Belarus, I should say, before this conflict, before more lives are lost and destroyed. You know, on another note, we'll talk maybe Zelensky a little bit later too. I just think that this guy, if it wasn't for him, this we would not be where we are today. Yeah, those talks, and we can fill you in on more details a little bit later. They ended today. It's exactly what I thought, without any resolution. But again, you pray that maybe that will change, and maybe that's another prayer intention for you. Belarus gave Russia its assurance that Putin can leave his forces there, which was something, you know, Putin has assured the world would not happen. So Belarus has now, if you think about this, just to zoom out, if you see how people are aligning, they have now aligned with Russia in this war. So we're seeing the players begin to take sides. Sanctions are underway, and Putin mentioned they're going to start to, you know, some people think it's not going to have much of an effect on him. I think they will. Apparently, they're already starting to hit the Russian economy hard. I mean, Joe Biden was saying not too long ago, the president was saying, oh, a month from now, we'll really see the effects of it. But people are lining up all over the country to withdraw cash from their banks. And one bank in particular is already on the verge of collapse because so many people are taking their money out, right? There's a huge run on the banks. A number of countries have also forbidden the Russian state airliner Arafat from flying over their countries, except for the U.S. But again, we're still buying Russian oil. I don't know if that'll stop or, yeah. How does that work? Yeah, something like that work. One product that people are rebelling against, though, is vodka. You heard in our news piece at the top, too. I found it entertaining that bartenders around the world stopped selling Russian vodka. People are pouring it out. They just are boycotting Russia on every level, from soccer matches to the drinking of their exports there. But the Pope is also continuing to do what he can, and he's called the Ukrainian president and encouraged him to stand fast against Russian aggression. So this came, you know, after Zelensky's response to the U.S. when zipping around the world. Right? Classic line, it'll go down. Not only, I think it's one of the big lines of the year. He says, I don't need ammunition. I need, you know, he says, I don't need a ride. I need ammunition, right? He's willing to stay there and die. And I think that has inspired a lot of people. People look at him as being heroic. Francis, Pope Francis, called this diabolic and perverse, and he renewed that call to prayer and to fasting. Here's a little bit more on how the Pope has been trying to address this whole Russian invasion.
A Vatican spokesperson says the pontiff had a 30-minute conversation with Moscow's ambassador at the location right behind me. This is an unprecedented move, as it's believed to be the first time that a pope has gone to an embassy to talk to an ambassador during a time of conflict. But Pope Francis is speaking out about the hostilities regularly, either during his own addresses or through his press secretary. Now, reports suggest the Pope offered to be a mediator in the crisis, although the Holy See spokesperson would not confirm or deny that information. The Ukrainian ambassador to the Vatican said in an interview last week that Kyiv would be open to the Vatican mediating potential negotiations. It's unknown how much influence the Pope has in an otherwise predominantly Orthodox Christian country, but it shows how much attention the conflict is getting across the continent, stretching in Italy and even the highest ranks of the Catholic Church.
Well, there you have it. Let's talk a little bit about it. If you want to join me, you can always dial in at 888-914-9149. In just a second, Dr. Michael Paul is going to be joining us. One final thought before I go to him, just something for you to think about. One of the aspects of this war that I think the mainstream media is overlooking, and something I think we should talk about, you're not going to hear a lot of that other than here, is the religious element, right? Putin himself is not a very religious man. He's played before the cameras in these displays of piety. He sought the endorsement of the Russian Orthodox Church, and they have willingly given it to him. But there was an article in Crisis Magazine I just saw. I may actually dive into this with you tomorrow to take a look at the myth of Vladimir Putin. When you look at the demographics, right, Russia is actually less Christian than Ukraine. Russia is also, far less Catholic than Ukraine. Ukraine not only has a higher percentage of Catholics, but it also has more total Catholics. There are, I think, 3.3 million Catholics in Ukraine versus, I think there's about 500,000, maybe 700,000 in Russia. Ukraine is also the home of the largest Eastern Catholic Church, the Ukrainian, you know, Greek Catholic Church. So this article, addressed some of these issues. There's a couple provinces in Western Ukraine that are Catholic as well, and Lviv is home to the Latin Rite and to American Catholics. So you got to wonder, with claims that Ukraine shouldn't even exist as a country, does Vladimir Putin have some designs against the Catholic Church? And we've seen this time and time again with totalitarian regimes. I'm joined right now by Dr. Michael Paul. He's an adjunct professor of history at Christendom College and an expert on Russia. Doctor, thank you for your time today. It's good to have you with me.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here.
I'd love your take on this. I mean, when it comes to the faith of Vladimir Putin, when it comes to Russia in general and his openness to it, what do we know for, let me ask your take on whether or not, give me your take on where he stands when it comes to faith.
It's really difficult to say. You mentioned that he has at least played to the faith and he's close with the patriarch, but the story is that there was a fire in his dacha years ago, and I don't know if he was injured or a family member was injured, but he had sort of a faith experience at that point.
Yeah, right.
But he attends Easter services and Christmas services and at least speaks of Russia as an Orthodox country. The government has supported the church and rebuilding churches and building new ones. They just built a large church to the armed forces, finished it up a year or so ago.
So,
but again, his personal beliefs, it's hard to say.
Yeah, right. But I guess I'm curious as to, you know, how he views the faith in this conflict. And I know there's a new Ukrainian Orthodox church where they're standing on, give me your take on the church leaders in this area. I mean, maybe that's a better way of approaching it. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. They had three churches since the collapse of the Soviet Union. There's the sort of recognized one that they call the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, but it's essentially an autonomous branch of the Russian Orthodox Church. And then there were two local ones. And the two local ones united in 2018 and were granted a tomos, or a decree of autocephaly, by the Patriarch of Constantinople. That one's now called the Orthodox Church of Ukraine. The Russians only recognize the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, the church that's part of the church in Russia. And the fear is that in the areas that they take over, or if they, God forbid, manage to take over all of Ukraine, that they'll essentially close down the Orthodox Church of Ukraine and force them back under Moscow's control. Yeah. Similarly, they'll probably do that with the Ukrainian Greek Catholic Church, like the Soviets and the Imperial Russians did in the past.
Yeah, I know it's a concern for a lot of people. Your take, if you could, just on whether or not Vladimir Putin has bit off more than he could chew. I'm assuming that he thought this would be over pretty quickly, and he's seeing incredible resistance. He's seen the world turn against him. We are seeing for the first time in history, $500 million flow into non-NATO nations to defend against something like this. Germany has changed its position. Has he bitten off more than he can chew? Did he blunder? Is this all part of the big plan? And is there an offering for him?
I think he has blundered, but my fear is that they'll come back with overwhelming force and defeat the Ukrainians. They have a tendency to blunder at the first step. They did this with the first Chechen war, but then they went back and defeated Chechnya in 1999. They did it way back in 1939 against the Finns, where the first 6 months they did awful, and then they came in with overwhelming force. I think you're beginning to see this where they're using artillery and cluster munitions in Kharkiv and other places that we're sort of entering a much more dangerous violent stage of the war. And the progress has been slower than they expected, but I think they still probably might defeat the Ukrainians, unfortunately. Yeah. In terms of international reaction, I don't think he expected this. I think he thought that we'd sort of look the other way, the way we did with Georgia and the Ukrainian conflict back in 2014, and sort of try and carry on as if nothing was happening. So I think ultimately, I think Russia will suffer and lose, and the economic repercussions are already being seen.
So is there an off-ramp for him? Fundamentally, I'm assuming you think he's just going to roll over, take Ukraine. I know the people of Poland, a lot of neighboring nations are very concerned that they might be next. I don't think he's going to go that far. But I mean, it seems like he's got very erratic behavior, threatening uses, veiled threats of nuclear weapons and readying his arms. And, who knows where this can lead? What's the off-ramp for him, and where do you think he'll stop?
I think probably now they'll carve off parts of eastern Ukraine and either leave them as sort of recognized entities like the Donbass, or they might join them to Russia. And then I don't know how far they'll go after that. The fear is that they'll pick a fight with the Baltic states, and then you've got a conflict with NATO. But a lot of his behavior, people have talked about maybe he's got mental health issues. I think it's a lot of that's, he's just a Russian. That's
really
Russian concerns they've had for years and desires. They've never really gotten over the loss of their empire, and so I don't know if he's going to completely reconstitute the Soviet Union, but I think taking back at least parts of Ukraine would, I think he hoped, rally people around him. That I don't believe that's going to be the case. Yeah. But I think we're going to see just difficult relations with Russia, much more difficult than they've been up to now. People talk about a new Cold War. I think we've got that. Yeah. And that's going to be the crisis, the problem from here on out. In terms of nuclear problems, he increased their readiness level. Mm-hmm. He essentially went from the lowest level of DEFCON to the second lowest. So yeah. It is concerning, but it's not like he's going to launch the missiles in any minute now necessarily.
Right.
I think it's more saber-rattling. But it is a concern that he's brought that aspect into the conflict.
And what about China in all this? This is one final thought. They're kind of between a rock and a hard place right now. They have not been very vocal, but where do you see China and their role in all this?
I'm not an expert on China, but I think that China may help Russia economically in terms of, since they've been kicked out of SWIFT and suffer sanctions, they could possibly turn to China for help. I think China will continue. They're not really an ally of Russia, but they'll side with Russia against the United States. Both countries have a tendency to sort of blame all the problems in the world on the U.S., at least for propaganda purposes. They'll continue to do that, but there's also a concern they might take the opportunity to try and seize Taiwan while we're focused on Ukraine. Hopefully that won't happen, but I think they're sort of uneasy with what's going on, but they might try and see some opportunity in it, at least for propaganda purposes.
Well, Doctor, thank you for your insights and your time. Great to have you here with me today. We'll continue to see what unfolds in the days ahead and pray that it doesn't escalate, that's for sure. But I'm grateful for your insight. I look forward to the next time we can talk.
Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, it's Dr. Michael Paul, adjunct professor of history at Christensen College and an expert on Russia. Stay with me when I return. I'll take a look at the prophecies of Fatima. You know, in 1917, the Virgin warned about the rise of Russia. We did see the collapse of the Iron Curtain. Was Russia consecrated? We'll see what happens. Stay with me. I'll be right back.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
All the issues, one place. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Coming up in 30 minutes, let's pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. We'll ask God for his mercy. And it's good to have you with me. If you want to join me anytime, feel free to do that. I want to take a look today at the spiritual side of what's happening in the Ukraine. You can get a lot of news. You can get a lot of up-to-date current events that's unfolding, of course, from a lot of different outlets. But I think taking a look at this spiritually and morally is really important. And one of the things I thought of over the weekend is I heard about the threat of Vladimir Putin possibly, you know, using nuclear weapons and just this aggression that we are seeing, you know, and invading a sovereign nation, and a lot of people concerned about where it's all going to end. I wondered about the Fatima revelations. You know, I wondered, I go back to 1970, this is a church-approved apparition, you know, and a secret was revealed. The Virgin, when she appeared in Fatima in 1917, she gave these three children, if you're not familiar with it, back in 1917, the Mother of God appears to these kids, gives them a message. She warns about the rise of a nation named Russia. She warned that it would spread its errors throughout the world. It would cause wars. There would be the persecution of the church, that the good would be martyred. The Holy Father would have much to suffer. And here's the frightening part of it. Not that that's not frightening, because that's terrible. But that various nations would be annihilated. That was the message from the church-approved apparition site, Fatima, Portugal. What does that mean? Right? Really, what does it mean? And where are we today with all of that? I mean, there's controversy over whether Russia was consecrated or not. I tend to believe it was. I think John Paul did that. I think he knew what he was doing. Why are we seeing this? It turns out that the Fatima message has been, I think, largely, if not totally, fulfilled, and it basically has to do with Russia. I mean, our Blessed Mother has said in the first two parts of that giant secret that Russia would turn atheistic, and that if it was not consecrated to her Immaculate Heart, it would spread her errors throughout the world, and she warned that nations would be annihilated. Were nations annihilated? Let's talk about that. Go back to 1917, right after these apparitions. What did we see happen? We saw prophecy come true in very vivid detail. Lenin came to power, right? The communists, they formed the Soviet Union. And what did that do? That absorbed all these surrounding countries. And I guess you can argue, in effect, annihilating them, right? Those nations were gone. So you can say that message was fulfilled. Was there more? And again, I'm giving you something just to think about and something to pray about. Might the annihilation have meant a nuclear holocaust? In 1992, in an interview with two visiting bishops, Sister Lucille de Santa, she was the sole surviving visionary there in Fatima, she actually said something that I'll never forget. I was struck by this, and I tend to believe her. She's the one who saw the Mother of God, right? She told these bishops that a nuclear war would have taken place in 1985 had Pope John Paul II, the great hero of our time, right? This beautiful Marian Pope that we all knew and loved, that nuclear war would have taken place had he not consecrated the world and in particular Russia to her Immaculate Heart during a ceremony he held in 1984. And I was struck by this because 1984, he did it on March 25th. March 25th is the Feast of the Annunciation of the Mother of God, right? More apparitions have began on that date than any other date on the church calendar. Also at that very date, down in a place called Batania, Venezuela, where I had spent many, many days, many, many weeks, the Mother of God came on that very day and appeared to about 105 people visibly. And she came under a title, which I thought, man, it's a beautiful title, but unique. She came under the title, the Reconciler of Peoples and Nations. Coincidence? Oh, I don't think so. I don't think there's any coincidence in God. I think that was a God incident. I think John Paul consecrated Russia. I think we averted a nuclear war. I think Our Lady has come under that title because it's a title for our time. So for Sister Lucia de Santos to say that the Pope prevented a nuclear holocaust, that goes to the third Fatima secret. Maybe we can talk a little bit about the Fatima secrets. Before I get into the Fatima secrets, let me just throw one more reported apparition out that also received formal church approval, the one in Akita, Japan, where the Mother of God, where an angel, appeared first to Sister Agnes Sasagawa, a nun in Japan. A statue of hers wept 101 times. The Blessed Mother came and spoke to Sister Agnes, and gave her a frightening message for the world. She talked about how the cup is filling up, you know. She spoke about a great chastisement that will befall the world if we do not pray, if we do not amend our lives, if we do not return to God. She says it would be worse than the deluge, worse than the great flood of Noah, that a large part of humanity would be annihilated, that those who survived would envy the dead. I'm just pulling all that from my memory. So there's probably far more detail to it. It's been a while since I looked at it. That did not come to pass. Why? I think because John Paul II consecrated the world to the Immaculate Heart of our Blessed Mother. You know, I really do. I really do believe that March 25th vision, and I do believe that the March 25th consecration and Sister Lucia, I think they're the real deal. So did the Pope prevent a nuclear war? I guess we'll know when we stand before God. But in the third part of the secret, you know, that was the great secret that was long coveted. Sister Lucia, when the third secret was finally revealed, spoke of an angel with a flaming sword in his left hand. That's what the description was. And flashing from the sword, these flames came issuing forth. And Sister Lucia said it looked like the world would be set on fire. But what happened? They died out in contact with the splendor of our Blessed Mother, who radiated towards him from her right hand, pointing to the earth with his right hand. The angel cried out in a loud voice. And this is the key. We're approaching Lent. I'm going to encourage you to do this for world peace, for the conversion of your loved ones, for your needs. This angel cried out, penance, penance, penance. Three times crying out the word penance. And that's what we need to do. We need to offer prayer, sacrifice. We need to do penance. And not only for our own sins, and believe me, we all should be offering penance for the way we offend God, but for what we as a nation have done. The flaming sword, if you go back to that imagery, it looked like a nuclear weapon. It sounded like the Blessed Mother prevented maybe multiple warheads, you know, and that through her protection in, you know, by her mantle, we are going to be protected by her by the consecration of the world to her. We were protected. You know, the secret also indicated that there would be suffering of popes, including John Paul II. And we saw in an immense light that is God, Sister Lucia, you know, she wrote in The Secret. She said something similar to how people appear in a mirror when they pass in front of it. And they saw, the kids said they saw a bishop dressed in white, and they had the impression it was the Holy Father. There were other bishops and priests and men and women religious that she saw going up this mountain, and at the top there was a big cross it was hewn, I guess, from a tree with bark, she said. And then before reaching there, the Holy Father passed through the city, half in ruins, half trembling, with halting step, afflicted with pain and sorrow. He prayed for the souls of the corpses that he met on his way. And having reached the top of the mountain on his knees, the foot of the big cross, he was killed by a group of soldiers who fired bullets and arrows at him. And in the same way, Secret says, he died. And in the same way, there died one after another people of different ranks and positions. He says, other bishops, priests, men, women, religious of various lay, people in different ranks and positions. He says, beneath the two arms of the cross, there were two angels, each with a crystal aspersorium. And they gathered up the blood of the martyrs, and they sprinkled the souls that were making their way to God. My question, and we're going to be joined by the president of the World Apostolate of Fatima, who for years tried to spread the message of prayer and penance and the rosary. My question is, was that John Paul II? Or could it be Pope Francis? Could it be the time we are living in right now? There's a lot of questions to look at, a lot to get answers. I find the similarities fascinating too. The gunman who shot John Paul II, he shot him on May 13th, 1981. That was the anniversary of the very first Fatima apparition, right? We know now that, you know, the communists caved GB in their last ditch to stop the Pope from aiding the movement in his native homeland, that solidarity movement. They wanted to take him out. It failed. John Paul said he was saved by the Mother of God. He credits her for saving his life. He says, you know, one hand pulled that trigger, the other guided the bullet. And when he recovered, actually, when he was in the hospital, you know, fighting for his life, and the doctors were amazed at the trajectory the bullet took. It missed all of his vital organs. They had no idea. It's as though a hand had guided the bullet. When he was recovering, he asked for two things to read in that hospital bed. One, the diary of St. Faustina. He wanted that. And the second was the third secret of Fatima. So, Our Lady, you know, interceding, consecration of the world. Did it prevent nuclear war? Or could we see it once again? When I return, the president of the World Apostle of Fatima, David Carolla, will join us. And we'll take a look at Russia, the power of the rosary is one of the things Our Lady called us to. First Saturday devotion. There's so many things we can do spiritually where you are. And this might be a great thing to embrace during Lent that can help bring about peace and protection and ultimately, a much brighter future. Stay with me. We'll talk more when I return.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
The Chaplet of Divine Mercy begins soon on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. Yeah, let's pray. I think we need to make this Lent a holy one. We're closing in just a couple days away. The Holy Father, of course, asking us to fast and pray for the Ukraine in a special way. This Wednesday, we'll tell you more about that. Of course, you can join me for the chaplet every day, the rosary with Father, the Mass here. And I'd ask you to do your own thing as well. I want to bring into the conversation, and if you want to join me, I only have David Carolla for a short time. He's the executive director of the World Apostle of Fatima. You can dial in 888-914-9149. He's been a lifelong Blue Army member. And again, we go back to 1917 when the Virgin Mary appeared in Fatima. The angel came with this message of penance, and we know the call to pray, especially the rosary. We know the important message that was given in Fatima, and I think it's more important than ever today, especially as we see Russia still playing a very prominent role in not only in geopolitics, but in the threat of war, and maybe even the fulfillment of some of these prophecies. It's good to have him with me today. David, welcome back.
Hey, Drew. Good to be with you.
I think about the Blue Army a lot because you and I have spoken many times about how the Blue Army of Our Lady, those prayer warriors, the faithful, the consecration of John Paul II has brought an end to the Red Army, the Iron Curtain, atheistic communism as we know it. As Vladimir Putin is rattling his saber, threatening nuclear weapons and untold, reciprocal action for nations who get involved, many people wonder what is going on. I still believe the message of Fatima is what's needed to bring peace to the world. Let me throw that to you, okay?
Sure.
Two things. Maybe you can start with what exactly are Russia's errors, and what happened across the span of the decades and where we are today. I know there's a lot there, but maybe take us on that journey, especially the role of Fatima during the Cold War and maybe today.
Yeah. Well, Drew, the errors of Russia is primarily atheism. Okay, it is replacing God with the secular entity that became the communist system, and the brutality that came because of that was a result of God not being there. Let's be realistic. I mean, obviously, what keeps us on the right track? It's the presence of God. It's the acknowledgement of God. Once you take that out of the mix, anything can go. Our Lady had asked for consecration, for this country to be consecrated by the bishops. Okay, as early as 1935 and 1936, when our Lord appeared to Sister Lucia, he said that he was dismayed that it had not been done yet. And that's 1935 and 36, only 5 and 6, 7 years after it was asked for. He also said the Holy Father pray for him. He said he will do it, but it will be too late. And that's the reality. I mean, the consecration was made, and I know, believe me, in these last days, you can imagine the email that I've come from the people who question the consecration and all that. Okay, look, I do not want to argue with anybody because we believe what we believe. But I will say one thing. Did Our Lady say that once it's consecrated, you can return to living in sin? Look at this world. Look at the things that we have institutionalized in our world, abortion primarily. I mean, war is a punishment for sin. Mm-hmm. And this is what's happening. It's happening here. It's happening there. I mean, in Russia, there has been there's this 70-year, mandated atheism that went through. And well, there's a big hangover from that. People are they have not returned totally to living. There has been a great move towards the faith in Russia. I've been there a number of times, spoken, know many people. And I'll be honest with you, from my personal opinion, the Russian people aren't behind this. No. I don't believe that they're behind what's going on right now.
No, I would agree with you. I don't believe that either. It's clear we're seeing protests. And again, this is the actions of one man. We only have a few minutes here. I do want to talk about what we can do. And I know the rosary is so key. That has been a prayer that has worked miracles against atheistic regimes in the past. I remember John Hafford, the founder of the Blue Army. He once said that the greatest sin in the world today are sins against the family. There are sins against parenthoods, against marriage. There's also national sins against the spiritual family of humanity, and I think we're seeing that today. The angel in Fatima also called for penance, penance, penance. And let's talk about that today. On so many levels, we see the rejection of God, right? The attack on the family. We see that attack on marriage. We're at a very pivotal moment right now. Now we see the threat of wars and rumors of war and maybe even nuclear exchange. Sister Lucia, the primary seer or the sole surviving seer at the time, and she was with us longer than the other children, said that the Fatima message really is the devotion to the Immaculate Heart. So there's a lot here, David. I want to talk about the rosary. I think consecration of ourselves to the Immaculate Heart, the consecration of the world is huge. Of course, First Saturdays, that is so important, and people need to practice that. So people want to think about what they can do during Lent. I say pray the rosary, pray the chaplet, First Saturday devotion. Like consecrate yourself. Do a 33-day consecration. So I'm going to give that to you spiritually. How do we make a difference in what we see, which seems so large and so beyond our control?
Well, Drew, next Saturday is First Saturday. And why don't, if people would really commit to, that's one of the things we ask in the pledge that we ask people to sign, to pray the rosary, be devoted to the brown scapular, and to move towards a fulfillment of the First Saturday's devotion. And believe me, I think that when enough people do that, you will see the triumph of the Immaculate Heart, and you'll see peace. I mean, what's happening today is so sad. It's shocking. Well, it was a little caught many people off guard, but not really. They've been bringing troops to the borders there for how long? Maybe the scale of this attack is what has really thrown people off in this world. Is this the work of a madman or a group of people? I don't know. Or is this part of a more concerted plan? But I do think, we counter this, just like our apostolate was founded in 1947, when Monsignor Colgan got up and called for a blue army of prayer to counter the red army of atheistic communism. Well, and what was it? And through the Fatima message, and that's where this came from. And the rosary is always pivotal. But truly, the First Saturday's devotion really is the part of the Fatima message that has not been fulfilled. It has not been fulfilled sufficiently. Many people do it, and I applaud them. And we here at our shrine in Washington, New Jersey, we will have a big event again every first Saturday, vigil on Friday night to Saturday morning. That's what our typical. More people have to fulfill the rest of this part of this Fatima request, and that is pray the rosary daily and don't back off. And you know what? Say an extra rosary because you want peace to come out of it. You want this to be settled properly and to have peace in the world. One, stop sinning. This is what we have to do. We have to stop offending God because war is what? A punishment for sin. This is what was said at Fatima, and it's a fact. All disruption in the world is a product of sin. So if we stop offending God, then he will listen to us, and he will provide the grace. And people like this will be taken off the world stage. And I'm just not talking about Putin, but all the people, these bad players, will not be there if we merit this enough.
Dave, to that point, though, I want to hit on that because I think about it all the time. Here in our own country, the Women's Health Protection Act is being voted on today, and it would basically undo every single pro-life law in this country.
Exactly.
Roe v. Wade will fall, but you see this battle between good and between evil. That's sinful. It is sinful action. You take a look at the embracement of immorality in our country, the redefinition of marriage, pornography. You see all of the abortifacients in vending machines. They're selling them in Illinois. I mean, how much more can you offend God? You know, and war is war is a punishment for sin. So I think more than ever, the message of Fatah is resonant. And we know the rosary, but I want to make sure people are aware, because I'm thinking about what I'm going to do this Lent, how I can deepen my spirituality, I can deepen my walk with the Lord, how I can grow in holiness. And I invite you to do the same thing today. Really, prayerfully consider what you're going to do. Ash Wednesday is just around the corner here. I invite you to maybe consider first Saturday devotion, praying the rosary daily, fasting, doing penance. The first Saturday devotion, since it's coming up, I do want to put that on people's radar, because this is a great way to start Lent. It calls for you to go to confession monthly, right? Receive Holy Communion, and you have to pray the five decades of the rosary and spend some time meditating with Our Lady. Am I correct in that?
She says here, well, you should have to do a confession within the octave, which is, we usually define as, I don't know, 8 days before or after. It's been changed somewhat, but yes, to confession, receive communion, pray five decades of the rosary. But this is the best part, is the way I look at it, is to spend 15 minutes keeping her company while meditating on the other mysteries of the rosary. Keeping her company, okay? There's more to it than just sitting there thinking of the mysteries. You have to be thinking about, you know, bringing yourself in the mindset of the Blessed Mother. That's really what you need to do. So that's what the first Saturday devotion is all about. It's not just about saying the prayers. Prayers are a means to an end, to holiness, and that's beautiful. But as you've got to get in there. I just got done writing my Voice of Fatima column, and I talk on that. And what I'm saying on here is, you know, Lent is here. Yeah. But let's not just look at, okay, so for 40 days I can't eat meat, or I won't do this, or I won't eat fast. Okay, whatever resolutions we make, and they're beautiful. But you have to live in a spirit of Lent. The children of Fatima entered Lent, and they never left it. They never left the spirit of Lent. And that's what we have to do. We have to be sacrificing ourselves for the sake of, you know, people who are sinning out there.
What are the promises? I mean, okay, first Saturday devotion, rosary, you know, confession, Holy Communion. What are the promises for those? Our Lady said, if you do this, now what are the benefits? What will you receive spiritually
from
heaven?
The grace of final perseverance, obviously, is the biggest thing. You know, you'll have the grace for that point. You're like, now, of course, people who live this way are going in that direction. And you know, my point, when people who pray are very likely to be saved, and those who aren't are very likely not to be. This is just the way it works.
Yeah.
And so but there's a special promise given here that, you know, because what you're doing is you're coming, bringing yourself in union with something that Our Lady developed. Okay, something here about I'm going to be part of this effort to save the world. And she said, in the end, my Immaculate Heart will triumph. She said, Russia will be converted and there will be peace. Well, think about that. You know, I mean, and again, going back to this idea of the consecration, was it done? Was it done right? Well, there's no question whether you believe it was done right or you don't believe it was done right. The reality is we all acknowledge that it was done very late. And being late, Russia spread her errors. And so, I mean, look at China. Look what's going on other places in the world. Look what's going on in the United States. Okay, look at the poison that comes out of our media. I mean, it is really. I mean, I just came back from California and I turned on a couple movies for a few minutes and I turned them right off. There's nothing. There's so much junk that comes over our media anymore, and it's very, very. It's frustrating, Drew, that we are so inundated in the poison that we have truly embraced in this country. So we can look at Russia, we can see the tragedy in Ukraine, and let's pray for these people. And we have prayer campaigns going on. You know, come to our website, bluearmy.com. We have so many resources for everything, especially about the first Saturday's devotion. But we certainly need to pray especially for the people of Ukraine. And for my wife and I, we know many people. We have, you know, we're from Chicago, of course, and we have property in the Ukrainian village neighborhood. Oh, wow. So we know many, many people over there. And it is very heartbreaking what's going on, you know.
David, I know it's been a battle for the Blue Army. And with COVID, I'm sure that Fatima, Portugal, has been shut down, your own national shrine here in the States. And yeah, I'm grateful for the effort. I know God's providence always will prevail. I think, you know, people think, oh, Fatima's over 100 years old. That's an old apparition. I just go back to this. When I see Russia rising, when we see the threat of a European and perhaps global war, I just think we got to go back to what worked previously. And that's exactly what Our Lady of Fatima said. We need to pray the rosary. We need to do penance. We need to sacrifice. This beautiful first Saturday devotion is filled with graces. And as Lent approaches, it's a perfect time to pray for our enemies. Dave, thank you for being with us. BlueArmy.com, if people want more information on the Third Secret or the First Saturday Devotion or anything else, BlueArmy.com. Go there and check it out. I'll have Maggie put a link up on our Twitter, too, so people can check it out. But I'm grateful for having you.
Always good to be with you. Thank you.
That's David Carolla. He is the executive director of the World Apostle of Fatima. Say a prayer for him and especially for that apostle. I'm telling you, they're going through a tough time. It sounds like a giant organization, right? The World Apostolate of Fatima. It reaches the world, but I'll tell you what, it takes a handful of people drive that organization, and they could certainly use your prayers and your support. And I would invite you just to learn more about Fatima. I think it's so appropriate as we're seeing these global tensions rise. Father Rocky prays the rosary every night at 7 o'clock. You can join him for the rosary. You can join me in just a couple moments for a prayer that St. Faustina also gave on the eve of the Second World War. And that was the Chaplet of Divine Mercy. It is prayer that changes things. It is prayer that moves the hand of God. It is prayer that will bring peace to not just the world and the communities, but above all your heart. So when I come back, I want to pray for you, for your needs. If you have a special intention you want some prayer power for, join us, okay? I'll give you the number. If you're new to the show, feel free to try to get in. 888-914-9149 and tell one other person right now we're going to pray, okay? Have them join us. 888-914-9149. We're back with the chaplain right after this.